accession number 32527, real 4.
So okay. You've gone to the grandstand and you...
Yeah, and I went in there and I saw a line of just young German soldiers captured, you know, and all that. They were very young. In fact, they were only 15, I found out later, and they did use them on the AK-AK sites for ammunition carrying and things like that. They weren't frontline troops.
Like
but they
Hitler
roped
youth.
In with everybody else and put in there. So I went up to them and I wanted about half a dozen to do all the scrubbing and things like that. And said, you see, come with me. And the last one that I did, oh, his face dropped. He was only a lad of 15, and his face dropped. I said, what? I said to somebody who speaks German, I said, ask him what's the matter with him. Because when they said, nothing's going to happen to him, he's going to be well treated and all that. And he said, well, he said, he's with his friend, and you haven't taken his friend. And he's frightened that if he gets separated from his friend, he'll never meet him again. So I said to them, right, well, drop one of the others off and put his friends on. You see, so put his other friend on, and they came along. Well, those two lads, they couldn't do enough for me. They worked like mad. I gave them a cigarette or two, which is quite illegal, you see. I gave them a few cigarettes, because cigarettes were currency, you see. The mark was worth nothing. The German, yes.
Deutschmark, yeah.
Yeah, Deutschmark. It was worth nothing, or practically nothing. You see, I gave them a few cigarettes and they worked like mad, you see. So each day after that, I went in and got the same fellas out, you see. And I got to know them and they could speak a little bit of English and they came from Austria. And they were awfully nice lads. And so I kept them supplied with the odd fags. We were only there a few days, say 4 or 5 days, and kept them supplied with that. And the last day I was on guard on one of the main gates, you see, about six o'clock in the morning, these lads came along on the other side of the road, and they hollered me, you know, cheerio, Bob, sort of stuff. I thought, for God's sake, keep quiet, you know. We weren't supposed to fraternise with these people, you see. So I threatened them to come over, and I said, what are you doing? He said, oh, we've been let out. I said, where are you going? He said, we're going home, to Austria. I said, how are you going to get there? I said, well, we don't know. We've no train ticket, nothing. I said, have you got any money? Very little, you see. But they weren't worried about that, you see. It was about 400 miles, you see, from... it wasn't Osnabrück, no. It was about 400 miles. So I gave them what money I had, and which wasn't very much and all that. But anyway, they were delighted. And off they went. At 6 o'clock in the morning to walk to Austria. I often wonder what happened. I should have got their address, because they were awfully nice lads. And that was the only war crime sort of that I ever saw in the army, was that one. And they said that, don't take that fellow's suffering from battle fatigue.
How did you find the Americans behaved?
I had little to do with the Americans, but the little that I had to do with them was, I'd say that they were very gung-ho, you know, and they were wasteful. I mean, our troops were careful of the casualties, because we hadn't got the men to spare. They were rather careless, I always thought, you know, with the casualties. They didn't take enough precautions. But I can't say I liked the American troops. But then I found out why when I went to America. Because unlike the British Army, when you were called up in America, they tried to fit you into the job similar to what you were doing in City Street. So you were some good to them, you see. And that's why a lot of the infantry in the American Army was black, because they had no qualifications. If you had no qualifications, you were put in the infantry. And they were a pretty rough lot. But I didn't have much to do with them. Very little, actually.
So what did you? What was your role once you'd cleaned out the...
Oh, well, we just went on into Germany after that. Well, I went down after that, down... Was it before or after? I can't remember. No, it was before. I went down to Liège, and then we came north again when it was over. And we crossed the Rhine at... I can't remember if this is where the Americans first crossed the route. They built a pontoon bridge.
Is it Remagen?
Pardon?
Remagen?
No. And they'd built a pontoon bridge, huge pontoon bridge, to get across the river. And when we got across on the other side, the town which we had bombed just didn't exist. And on one side they were friendly to us, and on the other side they spat at us because we bombed the place to places. But we crossed the Rhine, and all the Rhine bridges were down. All the destruction was dreadful. And I ended up then, Bremen we ended up then, but the war was up when the war was over. And I was sent up to Hamburg because within 3 days of the fighting stopping, they were bringing in the fighting units and disarming them, you know, as quick as that. And we were sent up, and my job was to get the radios off the tanks and the fighting vehicles, test them and grade them ready for send back to England. Well, it was an easy job to do. The job was getting them off the fighting vehicles. They were all fitted where you were lying upside down, working with your left hand, trying to undo a knot, you know, did a terrible job. So I got to three fellows to help me, and I got there, a young lad who was only 17. He was 17, he'd been in the German Navy and had been torpedoed twice.
Gosh.
Before he was 17, I tell you. He's trying to, anyway, he was a nice lad. His dad, I'm trying to think of the big, have I told you this? The big travel agent in England at that time. It didn't do holidays abroad. If you wanted a ticket to America or Singapore, you went and bought a ticket there.
Thomas Cook?
Yeah, Cook's, that's right, Thomas Cook's, that's right. And his dad had been the Cook's agent in Hamburg, so he spoke perfect English. We weren't allowed to mix with the Germans, really, but we did. Well, we had to if they got under. So I got this lad, and because he could speak English, it was too tedious to test them electronically. It took too long. So I got two sets that were good, and I plonked him in a field 200 yards away, and I said, right, talk to me, and I can tell by the strength of the signal how it is. And he had an accent when he started. Within 3 weeks, he was speaking perfect English.
Brilliant.
Yes. And there was an incident there. This is I don't know if it's of any interest or what was what you're taping. I was there with this van doing that. And my unit was back in Bremen. And so that was sort of again. You know, they were all fighting. All the fighting vehicles were coming in, you see. And I couldn't believe it that they were disarming so quickly, you see. So anyway, I got this lad and I met his father, and we got on very well down there. But I've forgotten now what I was. Oh yes, but he had. What they did was for the first few days after the war, the German troops. The thing was to get into civilian clothes, which they could do, but they couldn't get shoe wear. The patrols went round Hamburg, picking up people who had their army boots on, because that's all they could do, you see. And when they were taken in then for questioning, and when they released them, they didn't get their boots back, you see. And this lad, he came to work with rags around his feet, and it was an inch or two of snow on the ground, like we've been having, you know, worse than this. And I said to him after the first day, I said, have you had anything to eat? He said, no, we've got nothing, we've nothing much to eat. I said, have you had any breakfast? He said, no. And he only had these things on his feet, you know. So I thought, oh, well, this isn't good. Mind you, this wasn't the authorities' fault. This is a couple of days after the war finished. Well, not a couple, say a week at the most. And the British were very, very good, the speed with which they got the food supplies up. You know, it didn't take them more than a month to get them back to normal. But at the time, they were short, and the villagers used to come up to the camp. It was a huge camp. I didn't know it, but at the time, but later it was the headquarters of the British Army of the Rhine, you know, in West Germany. And it was a huge camp. And I picked this chap up, you see, and I slipped a couple of pieces of bread into my pocket, you know, and gave him them to eat. Because he had nothing to eat for a couple of days, you see. And then somebody split on me. Mm. Don't know who it was. And they also split on him. And I told him, when he had done nothing on his feet, I said, you go down to the camp rubbish dump. I said, you're bound to find us. Discarded, worn-out slippers, which will be better than nothing. And he came back with two left feet plimsolls, you know, gym shoes. Two left feet. And the guard on the gate took them off him. mean, can you guess? The war was over, you know. It took them off. And anyway, this went on. And I gave him this bed, and I got arrested for this, you see. I was nothing to do with these people, really. I was the only Remy there, you see. But anyway, I was mad about this. And you've always got to remember that from their point of view, well, I knew damn well they weren't going to do anything to me. Because the senior officer's got much more to do than a court martial or a trivial thing like that. I knew it would never go to that, you see. So anyway, when you get these loud shouting sergeants, you know, stamping shouted, and I was brought in and all this, you see, and in front of this commanding officer, and he was a very senior one because it was a huge place. He was wasting his time, it was, you see. And this sergeant, whatever he was, is shouting and bawling and the usual thing. And I said to him quietly, I said, can I have a word with you quietly? You see. He said, yes. So he kicked out everything. I said, look, I said, I gave a chap that was working for me a couple of slices of bread because he'd not had got nothing to eat. And I said, I'm not sorry, I'd do it again. You see, because I knew it wasn't going to go any further. I knew they wouldn't take it any further. I said, damn it all. I said, and he said, oh, well, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't, it wasn't allowed and all this, you see. I said, look, it's the first of the corporal works of mercy. Now, I don't know whether you know whether it happened in non-Catholic schools, but in Catholic schools, we had a little book called the Catechism. And in it was about 200 or 300 questions and answers. The bones of the faith were there. Mm. They were just questions and answers. And one of them was the capital works of mercy. And I know them to this day. Feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, harbour the harbourless, visit the sick, visit the imprisoned, bury the dead. So I said, it's the first of the corporal works of mercy. See, feed the hungry. And he said, is it? He said, is there a second one? I said, yeah. He said, what is it? Yeah. And the third, yeah. And when he was making me go through the lot, you see. And I looked at his face and I could see he was laughing at me. His eyes were laughing at me, you see. I thought, ah, you're a Catholic, you've been brought up the same way, you see. So he made me do something, you see. And then he said in the end, he said, Jaffa, clear off and next time don't get caught, you see. So I went off, but when he used to inspect his camp once a week after that, he used to just stick his head in mine because I was nothing to do with him, really. I was just had this big work, I had a trailer as a workshop, you see. And he used to stick his head in there. And he always smiled at me as much as said, yes, we understand each other, don't we? But I don't know why I did it, just got mad. That was the only time I got into trouble. Because somebody split on me. I was mad because it's a simple thing to give a bloke a piece of bread. Because
it's a humane thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a stupid thing to say, no fraternising, I think of all that. Because you had to if you employed their labour.
What did you think about their machinery and their tanks and the stuff compared to the British stuff?
The British stuff?
The German stuff, the quality of it.
Oh, the German stuff was far superior to ours. That 88mm gun was deadly and it was their standard weapon. But we were all dead. And what I liked about, well, not liked, but what I admired them from, they were so well trained. I mean, we were a bunch of kids sent over to France in 1940, you know. And we were only a bunch of kids up against a professional army. And no doubt there were atrocities committed. There always are in war. But our fellas had sort of a sympathy for the Germans towards the end of the war because they'd been born on the wrong side of the fence, you know. They didn't hold any enmity towards them. They might have when they were fighting them, but the fighting was nearly over by then. But no, I found the Germans, they tended to be, I found to be a little bit pompous, you know. But I found them very good. If a German said he'd do something, he did it. Couldn't rely on anybody else. Like the French would never do that. Now, of course, I never forgave the French because we fought like hell to defend London. They didn't even try to defend Paris. They're an army of 2 million men and never even fought. And our little army had to fight.
I think they were really let down by their high command, weren't they?
Well, I think that the Germans had developed this new system of mobile warfare, you know, the Blitzkrieg, and we were still fighting the last war.
We're still fighting trench warfare,
yeah.
Yes.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, so did you carry on just taking out radio equipment, or?
Well, after that, I was demobbed from there after a year. They kept me a year. That was the trouble, and I was annoyed about that.
So, did you have any celebrations on VE Day?
Oh, we did, yes. But didn't amount to much. I mean, we were in this place. What's the name? I can't remember the name of that city. We were there anyway, and all we had to do was send a note down with a truck asking to some place they'd kept it, and it was full apparently of Italian wine. And all you had to do was ask for it, and you were given it by the barrel load to take back. Well, I thought it was terrible stuff. Well, I didn't drink anyway, but I thought it was terrible stuff. But I think everybody was well drunk that night. But well, things carried on much the same for a year. But we got less trouble from the Germans than we got from the Dutch and the Belgians. The Dutch Nazis were a nasty bit of work. And so were the Germans, I expect. But I read a book, and that you never get any. We had no photographers and no war correspondents. So we never got any news. And there are no. I want to get a book written by the German side about that campaign in 1940. Because there's nothing in the British anywhere for that. And I did get a translation of a German book of one commander who was in charge of a tank division who was in that drive through Belgium and Holland and to Paris. And what happened was they stopped. Outside, they could have taken Dunkirk any time they liked. There was nothing to stop them, hardly. But they didn't. They stopped for 3 or 4 days. We used to think, what have they stopped for? You see? And this chap just mentions it in his book offhand, and he said they were so astonished at how easy it was to beat the British, to break through. And they couldn't find the British army. He said all they could find were groups. Probably it was all shattered in pieces, you know, pieces in groups. And he said, and they thought it can't be this easy. And he said that what they said was they stopped to rearm and refuel and do a repair before they drove on, because they thought they were driving into a trap. They thought they were moving into, thought the British Army must have retired and they were driving into a trap. But there was nothing. It was the biggest disgrace out there that was. Because they were fighting the First World War instead of the Second.
So after you were demobbed, did you come straight back to England? And
I was demobbed from Salisbury Plain, you know. I left Hamburg at about 6 o'clock in the morning. I was out of the army by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Landed in England. Gone straight to I don't know where it was, somewhere one of the army depots on Salisbury Plain, don't even know where it was. They discharged me there and I came home, and that was that.
That was the 24th of June 1946?
Yes, that's
right. So you had to sort of you came back to Torquay and sort of try to pick up your life again?
Yeah. I did work for a few years with my dad, and then I got a shop. I opened a business of my own. I had a shop in Brixham. Then I eventually ended up with my father's shop in Tolbay Road. And one further down the road, which I took over later. But we had the cream, because the holiday trade was booming in those days. Holidays with pay made us. But it's the same now. They're sending our troops out to Afghanistan. There's not enough of them, and they're not well enough armed and trained. They're doing the same thing again. They did it in the Falklands. They're never ready in this country. There would never have been the Second World War if in the 30s we'd armed ourselves. Hitler wouldn't have dared to do it, because he didn't want a war. He wanted it without the war, and he didn't believe we would fight. And we were absolutely defenceless.
Yes, that's very true. So, looking back on your war service, is it something that you'd say was an experience that you're glad you had, or?
Well, shall we say that I grew up. And if anything, when you get in a jam, you learn a lot about yourself, whether you pass the test or not, you know what I mean? And but on the whole, I think it's just a waste of time. Certainly a waste of good money. And as for lives, well,
and perhaps a waste of your youth.
Oh, well, yes, it took 19 to... I was 26 when I came out of the army. And I was 7 years, less a few days, less a few weeks. But I didn't like the army. In fact, I loathed it. But it was, I didn't mind it when, during the war, when I was doing a job. When I got onto radar and I was doing a job, and what's more, they educated me, you see, that's what I liked about it. I was sent off on course after course after course. Very little in barrack life, you know. And so I had an easy war, except for the first battle, you know, I had a dead easy war. Because the unit I left eventually was changed to field ambulance. And they went to the Middle East, and they went through all North African campaigns over to Sicily and up through Italy. And they fought at Cassino, you know, the Battle for Rome, that went on for 6 months. And we lost quite a bit of men there. And that's why I've raised my voice at that meeting. Nobody ever mentions the Territorial Army before, or the Great on the Home Guard and things like this. But their own troops that they sent there, nobody ever mentions them. I've never heard a mention of them. And the chap we left behind, that was a bit of a tragedy. I won't mention his name because I think his sons are still around here. But his dad had a grocer's in Minna Street. And of course, when the evacuation of Dunkirk was becoming public, you see, everybody in Torbay wanted to know, because we weren't just talking, we're painting a Brixham unit, you see, wanted to know where the 11th Casualty Clearing Station was. There was been no sign of no word at all, you see. And they were getting very desperate because we came over on the night of the 30th. And the Germans occupied the place about 36 hours later. You know, not the next day, but the early morning of the day after. How many days in May? 30 days in April, June, the May. There's 31 days in May, aren't there? Yes, there'll be a 31st day. The Germans occupied it on the 1st then. I could be mistaken in these things because memories play tricks on you. You know what I mean?
I think the town was the one man we left behind.
When it somehow news travels like lightning in wartime. You'd never believe how it. I don't know how they got to know. They were waiting. Where's the 11th Casualty Clearing Station? They wanted not a word. And then suddenly somebody got word that we'd landed in England. You see, I don't know how they did it. They got it. And the person, when they got round, they were practically dancing in the streets with the eyes of our unit was coming home.
Oh,
and the one chap, the people who got the news first, were the parents of the one chap we left behind to be captured.
Gosh.
Isn't that hard luck?
It's ironic, isn't it?
He was 5 years in a prison of war camp. He was well treated, though. They set up a British military hospital and he was a nurse in that for all the war. He was well treated till the Russians came because he was in Poland. And the Russians were, as usual, awkward, but they got him out in the end. I met him after the war, and he said he was well treated.
So is there anything else you'd like to say, or are we done?
I think I've said far too much.
You haven't at all. It's very interesting.
Not very interesting, no.
It is.
Not to an outsider.
No, this is social history. Thank you very much for talking to me.
I feel very sore about the medical corps.
Yes.
Because it should never have been like that.
No.
When I got into the real army, well, they were efficient. But this, that unit I was in was dreadful. We never got any leave, hardly. They would never give us any leave. I don't know why. Well, they weren't off. They knew nothing about the officers. They didn't know anything about the army themselves.
No doctors.
Yeah, they were just doctors dressed up in uniform. Probably did a week or two course or something like that. But they had no idea what war was like. Mind you, when it came to it, I think we behaved well. Because we worked like mad all the time, and they were full-time operating day and night. I don't know how true it is, but one rumour was in the unit, one of the surgeons, he was operating for nearly 3 days non-stop, and the commanding officer threatened to court-martial him if he didn't stop. So he did stop then, but they were working. That was the sort of thing they were doing, working non-stop day and night.
They showed their mettle then, anyway.
Oh, we did what they did well as a medical unit, but it could have been so much better. So much better.
Thank you very much indeed for talking to me. Oh,